BBC Radio Cambria
with Val Armstrong.
Just gone 10 past 10 Friday morning, and on the show today we're talking about life-changing events and how you deal with them. Well, joining us now is Lucy Crispin, a therapist who's based in Kendal. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Val.
It's a funny one, that, isn't it? When do I reach out my hand for help from the likes of you?
I don't think there's any right answer to that, really. As with all these things, there's what feels important and necessary and useful at the time to any individual in any situation. But I think because there are some quite significant differences between the sort of informal help that you and Kim were talking about earlier, you know, the relationships in the pub or over the kitchen table with some tea and a packet of ginger nuts, there are big differences between the really useful support we get there and the kind of support you can get from a trained professional.
Because the natural thing for us to do, you know, in troubled times, as we say, is to turn to our families and friends, because that's the natural thing. They're the people who are around you. They understand what you're going through.
Of course, they're the people that we love and trust and who love us and who want us to be feeling better than we are. So there's something really human about doing that.
So it's right for us to do that initially?
Again, I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. I think it can be difficult for people, particularly family members, to give you support if they're in the middle of the same experience themselves. For instance, coming to terms with a bereavement or an illness, or coming to terms with the impact of a job loss or something like that.
And the way that fragmented families are now... You know, not everybody has that immediate support around them anyway.
Yes, you can't assume that in any situation. If you are lucky, then you will have that around you. And if not, or even if you do, but they're tired or can't support you for whatever reason, then that might be a time to look for some professional help.
Yeah, it's strange because when, you know, obviously I've had health problems in the past,
yeah,
and I just soldiered on, you know, you get through it sort of thing, and you feel as though you see the light at the end of the tunnel. They always talk about that light at the end of the tunnel, don't they, Lucy?
They do.
You see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that light starts to get bigger and bigger, and I suppose it does, because you start to get back to whatever normality was. But a normality changes. With the likes of bereavement... and certainly if you've not experienced it to a certain level before, then you don't know what a normal behaviour during that process is anyway.
No, of course you don't. And that's not just true of bereavement. I think it can be true of any kind of loss, because we all experience all sorts of losses every day, every week. You know, loss of capacity and loss of relationship and loss of status and all sorts of things. So in those situations, you don't know how you're supposed to feel. And even just thinking, am I supposed to be feeling this? Is this normal? Even that in itself can become something that you feel distressed about and concerned about.
We do come across people in our lives who say, oh yes, that's normal, such and such went through the same and she felt like that, or oh yeah, that happened to my friend, yeah.
We do.
So, and people kind of make you, well, they try to make you feel better by saying that, but it doesn't necessarily help you, does it?
It doesn't, no. I mean, I think the impulse is often a really generous and good one, you know, that people want you not to feel alone and they don't want to see you struggling and hurting. But it can mean that your own particular specific experience feels a bit diminished or not quite attended to, or that it's being made something very general, which can leave you feeling a bit lonely with what's actually happening for you right then, right now. And it can also feel like a way of sort of diminishing it, not with any conscious intent to do so, but it can seem like, yes, that's just part of what happens, and there can be a message in there about, so just get on with it.
And not being able to deal with it yourself and not being able to cope, I don't know why, but so many people look at that as being a weakness.
They do. I think that in various cultures, there can be a great sense of shame around not feeling I can cope. You were talking earlier about the British attitude of the stiff upper lip, and it made me think of Winston Churchill and his KBO, which I probably better not spell out because there's a rude word in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. But the attitude of just, you know, keep going, don't give in to it. And I think the messages that we can get, whether because of our gender or the culture or the relationship or the family that we're in, about just keep going, can be very crippling. And they can lead to us having a big gap between what people see, which can be us apparently carrying on functioning as normal, and what's actually going on for the inside, on the inside for us.
And it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's ridiculous when you think about it, because, you know, if you have a problem with your body, if there is a physical problem with your body, you go and you get it dealt with. And there's you know, even if you've got it sore back, you'll go and get it sorted. If you've got dodgy anywhere, you'll go and get it sorted. So why are we still... well, I know it's generalizing, but, you know, the majority of us look at it and think, oh, no, I'll be fine. I'll, you know, if you are, for whatever reason, suffering psychologically, mentally, emotionally, that's also going to manifest itself elsewhere in your body. You're going to get problems, aren't you?
It does. And I think there's something about the demonstrable, you know, the broken leg or the eye that's not working or whatever it is, that's... we know that other people can see that, and we know that other people will accept that as this is a real thing that's going on. But I think that which isn't easily demonstrated or seen can be that much more difficult to reach out about.
I think some people are scared of the process as well, because it's a case of, OK, you go to your GP or whoever, and they might be able to refer you to get help, or you might approach the person directly, the therapist directly, to get help. And then there may be, because it's a strange environment to them, they're not used to being there and maybe opening up and talking through their problems or talking through whatever. It might not be a problem. It might just be something to talk about.
Indeed.
They don't know the process, so they don't want to be part of it. How does it work? If I were made an initial approach to get help, say bereavement help, what would happen to me?
I think that would very much depend on who you approached and what kind of therapy that you were looking into, whether it was through the NHS, whether it was through a charity, or whether it was through a private therapist, because those are the three main routes. So I can't really generalise about what would happen about those things. I can sort of talk about what the kind of... the way I work and what that would be like.
Yeah, I suppose if I came, you know, to your door and said, you know, Lucy, I think I might need your services. Can we, you know, can I make an appointment? Can I come along and see you? You know, what is the process?
Well, what I offer all clients is the chance to come and meet me, first of all, at no charge, just to sit down with me, see if they feel comfortable with me, see if they feel like they would feel safe. Because... although there are many, many different kinds of therapy, most of the research seems to demonstrate that it's the quality of the relationship between the therapist and the client that has the biggest impact on what the outcome is going to be. So ideally, when you, if you were to pitch up at my door, we'd have the chance to sit down together. I wouldn't have an agenda about what you needed to do or say. It would be a question of you laying out where you were and seeing if you felt, this woman seems okay, I think I can work with her.
So trust is the first bit that you need to...
It's absolutely central, yes. And if you're meeting a trained therapist or a trained volunteer at one of the many wonderful charities we've got around here, then you're also going to know that what you say is confidential, and that can be a big part of feeling safe enough to go to the places that scare you, knowing that this stays in the room. Obviously, there are exceptions according to our code of ethical practice, but for the most part, you can feel safe knowing what I say in here stays in here. And see how it evolves from there.
Yeah, and I suppose for some people, certainly if they're reliving trauma of some sort, or, you know, reliving somebody passing away, etc., etc., it's also coming to terms with having to deal with the emotional side, because that's going to flood out at some point, I would have thought.
It is, and that can be one of the reasons why people can avoid it, because there's something very scary about facing up to the really big stuff, about being real about it, because it brings us in touch with mortality and questions about meaning and our powerlessness and all sorts of things. So you need to feel safe with the person that whatever comes out here, this person's going to be okay with it. They're going to hold it. They're not going to be freaked out or change the subject or start talking about the weather or.
I know. That's it's trivialising, isn't it? When it might be something even very small to the person who's come to see you. You know, it might be in everybody else's world, what the problem might be very small, but to them it's massive.
Absolutely.
You know, and I suppose the stage I'm at the moment through my bereavement is, you know, I do obviously talk about Mum because I find that is very therapeutic.
She, yeah.
You know, I always mention her all the time anyway, as I would normally have done. But if I get into an area where I start to get upset, I get very upset, and then I get into panic mode in that I can't get back from it. Do you know what I mean? And that is, and I kind of think, well, do you know, that's probably normal. Lots of people probably go through that. So I don't beat myself up about it.
Well, I'm so glad, because I think that's a very common experience, whether about bereavement or any other thing that's had a big impact on you. It can be so frightening to let go into the feeling and think, oh, will I come out of this? Will I survive this? And that's where someone who's trained and who has, I would hope, done lots of work on themselves, and so they won't be freaked out, will be able to just sit with it. And them not being freaked out and them being able to hold your experience is a part of you learning that you will survive it too. And that's a really important part of what can happen in therapy.
I think anybody listening to this morning, it's... First of all, you've got to identify that maybe you do need a little bit of help. And then it's taking that step to approach to get help and then going with it. Try it. If it doesn't work for you, then you've tried it. You've explored that avenue. But at least, you know, it's not going to harm you and it's not going to damage you, is it?
No. I think it's very important to trust your instinct when you meet someone. If you get a sense of, ooh, I don't know if I want to go there with this person, then that's some important information for you about how you would feel working with them. But it might be worth trying somebody else or trying a different kind of therapy. But there's something about having the courage to make that step and to say, actually, I'm not handling things as well as I want to. That should be met with great respect and compassion by a therapist. And I would hope that would enable you to start the work with them, to start on the journey, wherever it's going to take you.
Lucy, it is a fascinating area. It really is. And one of these days, I'm quite sure that the British public is going to just kind of blow the stigma out of the water. It ain't going to exist anymore.
I hope so. The BACP, who's the main professional body for therapists in Britain, did some research last year, and the figures they come up with suggest that more people are both seeking help and talking about having got the help. Apparently 28% of people they talked to admitted to consulting a counsellor or a psychotherapist in 2014, as opposed to 21% in 2010. So things are changing. 54% of people say they know somebody who is, whether it's a colleague or a friend or a family member. So I hope that sense of stigma is dissolving. But for the moment, while it's very real, I think if people who do feel able to talk about, yes, I've had help and it's been useful, can do so, that can only help the movement towards openness.
Of course, it does. Word of mouth all the time, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
Pass the message on. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me on the show this morning.
You are very welcome.
All right. Lucy Crispin there, therapist based in Kendal. Yeah, very wise words. Amazingly wise words. And I don't mind talking about. I think I would probably benefit from, you know, a session to help. It's absolutely, I don't see any shame at all in going through, you know, obviously I've been going through the process of bereavement, which I found very, very difficult, amazingly difficult. We always knew it would be tough, but phew, when this thing hits you in the face, I'm probably talking to a lot of people who have suffered bereavement in their time, but it was the first big bereavement we'd suffered in our family for 40 years. And 10:26, it's BBC Radio Cumbria.